It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's almost Mother's Day, so that means it's time to talk tomatoes. Linda Knave is an Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. She is here today. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And, of course, Richard Giron is also here from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And, all right, Mother's Day. Yesterday, we had quite the conversation in the newsroom because I said it's time to plant tomatoes because it's Mother's Day. And then my esteemed colleague Dean Borg said, no, it's not time to plant tomatoes yet because we haven't had the three frozen kings yet. So do you know about these kings, Linda?
No, apparently, I've never heard of that.
Apparently this is a Czech legend, and it's supposed to help you hold off to protect your tender plants against the latest possible frost. And so you're supposed to wait through three cold spells in May.
Hmm.
Were these Czechs familiar with Iowa?
Well, I think some of them were.
Maybe it was before climate change.
Right. But Mother's Day is the official, in for most gardeners, this is the day that we're free to put the tomatoes in the garden, right?
We typically go by the average last frost date of the season. And in central Iowa, it usually runs right around Mother's Day, around the 5th of May, 6th of May. Northern Iowa, we can expect a week later. But I think as gardeners look at the extended forecast, now that we have the ability to look 10 days out, I think we're pretty safe right now. You never know when it might surprise us. But I think
we certainly have had surprises.
Yes, we have. But I think as long as the lows are above 40, we're looking pretty good that we can set them out. And the soil temperature has been pretty good conditions for that. And that also is an indicator for if we can set our warm season plants out or not.
All right. Now, of course, when I go, usually we fail to start seeds, or if we start seeds, there's something that goes wrong. So when I go to the garden center to buy my tomato plants, I have a tendency to get a little overexcited. I buy too many plants, but also everything looks so good and so exciting, and I want to try it. So when you go to buy your plants, how do you decide what varieties you want to grow?
Well, first of all, all gardeners should put together a plan. Plan their garden out on paper ahead of time. Even if you have just a 4x8 raised bed, plan it. That way you know I can accommodate three tomatoes, two peppers, this many onions or radishes. Plan it out. It's kind of like going to the grocery store hungry. You know, you go and you see, oh, I like this. But if you go with the grocery list, you can contain your purchases a little bit. So that's what I recommend is have a plan. And as to what varieties to grow, well, that's a really good question because Extension does have a publication, PM 607, called Suggested Vegetable Varieties. And it does list a number of varieties for each particular crop and that do well in Iowa, kind of the proven true blue winners for Iowa. Now, that's not to say the one you like is bad because it's not on that variety list, but these are some that gardeners have shown to be the best. So, and they've been put into variety trials at demonstration gardens around the state, and so they just seem to be the best for Iowa.
All right. Now, how about with your personal perspective, Linda? You know, there are so many wonderful heirloom varieties that are available now. Just 20 years ago, it was hard to look past, you know, just a few hybrid varieties that were available in all the garden centers. But now we have so many options. So how do you feel about heirloom versus hybrid?
Both have their values. Hybrids are disease resistant. Many of them ripen over a concentrated period of time because they're called a determinate variety. Concentrated period of time, I'm talking 4-6 weeks. The hybrids are bred for sturdiness. They're bred for lack of green shouldering, quality, appearance, these sort of things, where the heirlooms tend to be more of a magnet for diseases for the most part. They don't store as easily. They're more flavorful. I gotta say, many of them are extremely flavorful. But for example, let's take one called Brandywine or Cherokee Purple. They're not real pretty fruit. So if you're looking for the real pretty tomatoes, they're not real pretty. They have a great flavor, but you can't stack them when you're harvesting them because they're very soft fleshed. So if you pile one on top of another, the bottom of the bottom pile is going to be mush by the time you get it in from the garden. So these are some of the things you need to consider when you're selecting heirlooms. I'm not saying they're bad. They have great flavor. They're not as productive as the hybrid tomatoes. They won't yield as many, and you may have more issues with cracking, green shouldering, and things like that.
But, so you have to know how you want to use them.
Exactly. Now, commercial growers will grow them, and that's why they get the premium price, because one is you what we call out more because of the bad, and they just don't yield as well. And so that's why their prices are higher at the farmer's market. Plus, you run into these cases where they just don't ship very well, so they have more perish on the way. That's why your prices are higher at the farmer's market for those, but they sure do taste good.
Right, and for those of us who are going to pick tomatoes out of our garden and eat them immediately, that's still a great option.
It is, it is. So, and there are so many different varieties available. Last year I tried unique small fruited varieties, such as the grapes that were heirlooms, and one was called Tiger Stripe and Red something rather. But anyway, they were six different varieties. They were so unique in color, and so in a bowl they look beautiful. The flavors were so different from one to the other, so they made a great conversation piece. And just the diversity that you can grow in your garden is so much fun that you can't find at garden centers, and you can't find at farmers markets maybe, or at the grocery store. So that tomatoes offer such diversity.
And I think when heirloom tomatoes started being available, maybe there was a little bit of a backlash against some of the hybrid varieties, thinking, well, you know, we're going to grow heirloom tomatoes because they have so much better flavor. The hybrids, for my money, any garden grown or any tomato grown in my garden tastes so much better than any tomato I can buy at a store, that the reliability factor really does weigh pretty heavily on my choices.
And it does, because many of the hybrids are great for canning and processing, such as Celebrity can be used for just about everything. And fresh eating, you can't beat the flavor of Celebrity or Jetstar, and some of the ones that the farmers market vendors are growing. The color goes clear through the fruit. They're harvested at their peak or just before. They're not harvested at the mature green stage and let ripen. Just the overall flavor of homegrown tomatoes you can't beat.
All right, well, let's talk about growing them. We know we need warmth. We know we have to wait until after that final frost. What are some good tips for success in the garden?
Hardening off. Whether you grow your transplants at home or you buy them at the garden center that are coming straight out of the greenhouse, I would suggest taking a few days to a week and setting them outdoors in a shady, non-windy area and gradually giving them more light every day. This way, when they hit the garden, they're ready to go. They're acclimated to the outdoor conditions and they won't skip a beat. Sometimes you put them straight out from the garden center to your garden and it's a hot day like today's going to be, they turn white and you wonder, oh my gosh, are they going to survive? It sets them back, but by hardening them off, that extra 3 days to 5 days that you take to do that is going to make a huge difference in the way they take off and grow in your garden.
I wish that there was a tag at the garden center that said this, because I think a lot of us make that mistake where we just take them home and stick them in the ground.
We get so anxious. Same thing goes with other bedding plants that you're going to be planting out. Peppers, eggplants, cabbages, broccolis. By hardening them off just for a little bit of time makes a huge difference. And if they wilt in their cell packs a little bit, water them, they perk up. That's part of the hardening process.
All right. Now, when we plant them, of course, we know tomato plants are going to get a lot bigger. What are your methods that you like as far as protecting that plant as it grows? A lot of us have tomato cages. Some of us stake our tomatoes. What do you like?
Well, we call it a tomato vine, don't we? You know, people say, oh, your tomato vines. They're really not vines. They're just sturdy plants that the fruit tends to make that vine, that stem bend over. So they seem like they vine all over your garden. There are various ways. There's no right way to do this. It's what whatever serves the purpose and works for you. Now, I've seen people put cages around them, but you can't use chicken wire. You have to use like a reinforcement wire so that you can bring the fruit out of the cage, reach through and grab that fruit when you're harvesting it. If it's a chicken wire, of course, you can't do that. You have to reach down in and it's not very effective. So find the right materials and make sure it's large enough. Some of these little cages that you get at the garden center that are sort of they look like ice cream cones.
Right, yep.
And they have little wires that are about three levels. They are good probably for green peppers, but not for tomatoes, because many of our tomatoes outgrow those.
Invest in the big ones if you're going that route.
Yeah, make your own and stake it so it doesn't blow over. Secure it if it's a tomato cage. That's really important, because if it blows over, it's going to break the stems of your tomato plants, and you don't want that. So stake it, secure it from the wind. So caging is a good way. Just by putting a stake in at the time that you plant your tomato, a good sturdy stake like a tea stake, a steel stake. You can use large wooden ones, but they should be tall enough and sturdy enough and deep enough so that the plant doesn't tip over. And then you tie the stem loosely to the stake using fabric. I used to say nylon stockings, but people don't wear much of those anymore. So something that'll give in a figure eight. So the one loop's in the stake and the other loop is around the stem, and stake it up that way. And that works fairly well too. I've seen some people clip them or tie them to cattle panels in the garden. They like their pea trellis. They use it for their tomatoes. Some people put those cattle panels on each side of their tomato plants to keep them in bounds, and that works as well. But the key is don't plant them too close together. Although when they're real small, when you plant them 2 to 3 feet apart, it looks like, oh my gosh, this is wasting space.
Right.
But eventually they grow in, and the more space that you can accommodate for the plant, the better the air movement through that plant and less incidence of diseases.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We're talking tomatoes today with Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. Horticulturist Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension is also here. They are here to answer your questions, so give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we've been talking tomatoes so far because for many, Mother's Day is the starting gun. We get to start planting tomatoes on Mother's Day around much of Iowa, although, as we talked about earlier, you might want to wait a little bit longer up north. With me, Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and horticulturist Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. And before we get to questions, I want to just touch on a couple other topics. One is disease management. And Richard, you have reminded us almost every week for 20-some years that...
To rotate.
Right. So you need to move your tomatoes from where you had them last year.
Right. Because the plant pathogens can persist in the soil for at least 2 or 3 years. So ideally, rotate as best you can, as far away as you can, even though it's a small garden, and that should help.
All right. Now, also, let's talk a little bit about container gardening. And we have a question from JM. I do container gardening, tomatoes and peppers mostly. Other than potting soil, can you offer any other tips for good results? And you can have great results with container gardening with tomatoes and peppers, right?
Right. Just make sure the container has drainage holes in the bottom. Use a high-quality, well-drained potting mix. And make sure it's big enough. And... make sure you set it in full sun.
All right. And when talking about rotating every year, if you do container gardening, do you have to have a complete turnover of soil in the container every year as well?
Yeah, I would typically dump the potting soil at the end of the year, because even though disease may not be a problem, the potting soil begins to degrade and the physical characteristics aren't quite as good the next year. So I would get fresh potting soil every year.
All right. And I'm such a terrible gardener. I'm thinking about going back to container gardening with my tomatoes because I had better results back then when I didn't have ground for a garden than I do now, with plenty of ground for a garden, but the weeds always get ahead of me. Linda, anything else we should be thinking about heading into tomato growing season?
Well, as you talk about container gardening, what comes to mind, too, is the amount of water that you give them. they, in, as they're flowering and fruit producing fruit, they're going to go through a lot of water. As the fruit, the plant starts to grow, set on quite a few fruit, they say it takes almost a half a gallon of water per plant to sustain that plant and get the fruit as a, at a good size. And a good consistent moisture is important as well. So water, keep it watered, particularly as we go through the hot, dry spell. And especially if you have it in a large clay pot, because they dry out very quickly.
All right. And when you water, do you have some advice for how to water?
Yes, that's a good point, Charity. I know what you're getting at. And when you water, whether it's in the field or garden or in your pot, water the soil. Keep as much water off that foliage as possible, because it's the splashing of the soil onto the foliage that transmits the disease, or we get the foliage, the disease coming up the plant, particularly the fungal diseases, the foliage fungal diseases. So keep the water off the plant, allow it to dry out. Water early in the day so it does have a chance to dry off if it did get wet. So the key is keep the foliage dry.
Okay, don't set the sprinkler up over there.
Right.
And water slowly and deeply.
Slowly and deeply, yes. And again, early in the day does help because the plants are going into the day. They need the moisture, but also because you get the chance for that to dry off. And don't go out, regardless of what you're growing, and just hand hold the hose and sprinkle the plants. That does them absolutely very little good.
Although it's a lovely meditation.
Yeah, yes, it is. It is very comforting, very good after work, brings your blood pressure down. But it really, unless you're going to hold it in one spot for quite a while, it's not really going to do that much good. And I've rarely see people do that. They see out there moving it, oscillating their arms, sprinkling. It's not really effective.
All right. Let's get to the phones. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Marjorie is on the line from Leon. Hi again, Marjorie.
Yes. My dad had a tomato tree. And he had it in the dining room. And a lot of times when we had visitors or we had Thanksgiving and things like this, we ate a lot of those tomatoes, and the people really liked them. And he kept it in the dining room. And then I have a brother in Gale, Illinois, who makes tomatoes as big as small pumpkins. And they're delicious, and they're red, and they're good. Is it the soil that does that, or what causes them to get so large?
It's the variety. It's probably a beefsteak type variety or something like that, one like Big Beef. It gets very large, and the fruit size is a pound or better. They're huge. They fill a sandwich bread up perfectly, and they are very, very juicy. Sometimes they're meaty. Yeah. Sometimes they're more juicy than meaty, but they're fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun to grow. Plants don't accommodate too many of them, and that's another reason they get a little bit larger, is because they don't set on that many fruit, but they get really good size. Mm-hmm. Beefsteak type.
But everything that's planted, like corn or radishes or everything, all is big in the soil.
Wow. He must have a real green thumb.
And he must know just the right varieties, a green thumb, good growing conditions, good deep soil.
All right. Well, we're fortunate
here in Iowa. There's a lot of locations like that.
Right. Marjorie, thank you so much for calling. Now, she talked about a tomato tree. I don't know what that is. Linda?
Well, there is a plant that was fairly common maybe 15, 20 years ago. It wasn't a true tomato. It had kind of egg-shaped fruit. You found this in some of the ads in the back of magazines.
Or in the Sunday supplements.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And it was kind of a farce. It really wouldn't produce very well indoors, but it was rather interesting, and I'm sure they sold quite a few.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Next, we've got Ron on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, hi. I grow Australian oxheart tomatoes, and I had a problem last year where the leaves turned fern-like, and that when they were hardening off. So to avoid it this year, I, first of all, had several controls. I gave some of them away. I changed my seed source, and it still came again to the ones I have at home. And I'm wondering if this could possibly be 2,4-D. Are tomatoes especially sensitive to 2,4-D?
As you spoke, I was thinking, boy, that sounds like it could be maybe some damage due to a broadleaf herbicide. Tomatoes are very, very sensitive to the broadleaf herbicides like 2,4-D, and that can cause distortion or feathering of the foliage. But
the ones I gave away are perfectly fine. They're great.
Right. And things like 2,4-D on a windy day like today can drift quite a bit. And it doesn't take much, but usually when the exposure is very, very small, they typically recover within like a week or two. So
I'll have a chat with my neighbor. Thank you.
So it's not a long-term problem typically.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. Ron. Yeah,
that's a good variety, by the way. That's a real good heirloom meaty variety, the Oxhearts.
All right.
Fun to grow.
Well, and on the subject of varieties of tomatoes, Susan is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about paste tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I have tried to grow them for years now, and I don't seem to have much luck with them. I grow hybrid tomatoes, heirlooms, small, big, and they all do fine in my garden and thrive. But the paste tomatoes, the leaves look really listless. Overall, they're largely leafless, and the yield on them is really bad. I've tried Roma's Amish paste, and this year I have Opaca, and my husband looked at them before I put them outside, and he said that they look like they're dying. And I said it's not. That's just kind of the way they look. Is my problem with variety, or is it something that I'm not doing right?
Are you growing your paste tomatoes and your slicer tomatoes together? Is it the same conditions?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
They're side by side, and I did hear you say that they needed space. They get plenty of space. They get plenty of sun. The soil is great. All the other tomatoes look great, but I just don't seem to have luck with the paste tomatoes.
I mean, basically,
I really would like to have them.
Basically, it's the same type of plant. Mm-hmm. It should look basically the same as far as the plant itself. One that I really like is Pony Express, which is a hybrid. It's kind of an all-purpose, but you can make a paste. You can use it for paste, too. But it's kind of egg-shaped and very, very productive. I've grown it.
Mm-hmm. I also like one called Mariana. It is a larger paste tomato, and it's very firm and very solid and very meaty. Not dry meaty, but very meaty, called Mariana, and I really enjoy that one too. My suggestion is most Romas are determinate and indeterminate, so I would check on that and make sure that you get that growing in the right condition. Romas tend to set on a concentrated period of time, and so they're not going to be producing all season long like some of your slicers that are more of the indeterminate type. Some of our hybrids are determinate as well, but they tend to produce for a longer period of time. They have their peaks but continue to produce. The Romas, really, they come on real fast, and they're off, which is good for the processors because they can go through with a once-over harvest for commercial processors. But keep that in mind as well, that they're not going to stretch out their harvest as a determinate.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call, Susan. Next up, we've got Lucas in Fairfield. Hi, Lucas.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, my grandparents recently asked me to build them a raised bed garden, but they want it actually off the ground. I don't know exactly what they want to put in the garden, but we had just talked about switching the dirt out, and they want it like 2 foot by 16 foot. That's quite a bit of material to move in and out every year. My question is whether or not that's even a good thing to do, because they want it built out of wood.
And so they want it like a table? They want actually space in between?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, I told them I'd do it. I built raised bed gardens before, but, you know, they're always just essentially, you know, what typical raised bed garden, which is on the ground still.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how deep would it have to be if it is feasible to have a tomato plant in there?
Well, I think you're going to need at least 12 inches of a potting, okay, of a soil mix. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be strictly soil. I would basically fill that with a mix of 1/3 good, fertile, well-drained soil, 1/3 organic matter, like compost, and 1/3 coarse sand. The coarse sand provides the drainage. The organic matter holds the moisture. So it's a nice combination, and you shouldn't have to change it, but you're going to need at least, I would say, a good foot of your soil mix. And as far as tomatoes, growing tomatoes in the raised bed, I guess I would concentrate on the determinate varieties that don't get too big, because the indeterminates could get to be 5, 6, 7 feet tall. That's going to be difficult to manage in a raised bed, especially one off the ground.
Right.
And so I would stick with the determinate tomato varieties.
Another option to consider would be to use half whiskey barrels. It elevates the plants, gives you a fairly good size planting area, and you can fill it with soil. It gives you good root depth. So that's just a thought, too.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you.
All right. Well, good luck. Sounds like a very big project on your horizon. Lucas, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Kevin in Eldridge. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Charity, Linda, and Richard. I'm still going to try this year for cucumbers and some tomatoes, but I want to know if new in-the-envelope seeds from this year will still be good next year, and should they be stored in the refrigerator or where? And then I have a question about trees.
Right. Things like tomato seed, pepper seed, cucumber, squash, you can typically store that for 2 or 3 years. The main thing is keep it in a dry location. They can't get wet or damp, so it should be a dry location. I typically put them in a cupboard where they're cool and dry, and they typically are fine.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right.
So I need, there's a website with a list of truly qualified people for trimming trees and not just somebody with a tree trimmer license.
Right, right.
I hired a local so-called tree trimmer who butchered a middle-aged tree and it died. I'm willing to go as high as a degreed forester if I have to.
Right. As far as a list, there really isn't a list that's available per se. What I do is I suggest that people, if they want to hire someone, start in their phone book and look under tree care and very carefully read the ads. Look at the ads and look for certain words. And what I'm looking for is, for example, a certified arborist, because that denotes some experience, some knowledge, okay? And if they are one, they're going to advertise that fact. So I look at that. Then I look at how long they've been in business. That helps too. And then I would ask friends, neighbors, relatives, if they've had a tree care company, and did they have a good experience or bad experience? And using all of that, then I would pick out my arborist.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Kevin. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to join the conversation. Here's a question from Carly in Granger. My question is, will pruning an heirloom tomato plant inhibit or help growth?
First of all, let's go back to what pruning a tomato involves. Pruning a tomato is where you remove the little shoots, we call them suckers, that emerge between the stem, the axils of the stem and the leaves. And they will then produce a large branch that will then fruit. By pruning them, it makes a more manageable plant that you can stake, tie to the stake or cage. But we only do those with varieties that are considered indeterminate, which are the tall growing ones. We don't want to do much pruning on our hybrid varieties such as Jetstar Celebrity and some of the others, and our Romas. We don't want to be pruning on those. So we're looking at indeterminate varieties, and will it help or hurt? It does cut back yield a little bit, but I think overall you get a better quality. They're easier to manage. easier to stake up. So by diligently pruning out those, you are cutting a little bit of your yield, but not that much. I think you make up for it in quality.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. With me today, Linda Nave, an Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and horticulturist Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. You can join us with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we've been talking a lot about tomatoes this hour. We are also answering your questions. So far, I think we've only really talked about tomatoes, but you can ask questions about any of the plants that you'd like to grow or grow better. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension and Linda Nave, also with ISU Extension. She's a program specialist in value-added agriculture. And before we move on to the next question, here's a second part of Carly's question. How do I know a determinant variety from an indeterminate variety?
You look at the label.
You look at the label. If you look at those little white tags in the plants, they will say, you know, the variety and have a picture of a tomato, and then below it'll say determinate or indeterminate. It clearly specifies most. I've not seen one lately that does not do that for us.
Okay. I think a lot of us just ignore that little bit of information.
And one other thing about our hybrid tomatoes as we're looking at the plant labels, you'll see some letters associated with the name of those tomatoes. Like sometimes you see one that says VFNT. Those are indicators that those plants show resistance or have resistance to specific diseases. For example, Fusarium wilt, they'll have Fusarium wilt races 1 and 2. N stands for nematode resistance. There's spotted tomato wilt virus, and Verticillium wilt resistance. So in our hybrids, if we see that VFNT 1, 2, or whatever, that does tell you that there are some disease resistance bred into those tomato plants. Which is a good thing.
And particularly if you have a problem with a certain disease.
Yes, exactly. Now, you won't see early blight or septoria leaf spot on those labels because those are the foliage diseases many of us get. But good cultural management as far as good plant spacing, staking them, caging them so we get good air movement through that.
Watering them properly.
Reduce the amount of splashing.
Right.
Yes. That all will help.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. David is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hi. I just heard a disease description that may be what's going on with my realm of tomatoes.
All right.
I've been growing Romas for 20 years. In the last few years, it just keeps getting worse. The tomatoes get black spots on them and black inside of them within a week to 10 days after they're picked. I was thinking it was botrytis.
Do you on your romas, is that spot a little spot, speck, or is it sort of a sunken spot?
It starts out as a little speck and then it becomes a sunken spot, and the inside of the tomato itself is black in that area.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's anthracnose, and anthracnose is another fungal disease that typically attacks the fruit. It can get on a lot of different, anthracnose is on a lot of different species, but in this case, it starts out as a little spot, and sometimes you don't even notice them when you harvest it. You set it on your kitchen counter, and all of a sudden, there's that anthracnose spot. Again, good sanitation in the soil, crop rotation helps a lot. Keep the plants from sitting right on the ground. I think that makes a big difference. Stake them, cage them, whatever, to keep them off the ground, and you'll significantly reduce your anthracnose.
We do all of that. The only thing the only thing I haven't been doing is watering the ground only. I've got a gazillion tomato cages made from welded wire fence, and they're kept up off the ground. And it just seems to be getting worse. Is there any inoculant or anything else I can do? Because I've got 4 8-by-8 raised beds, and we never put tomatoes back in the same bed for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you remove all the...
I rotate like, yes, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. All the plants and everything else go out as soon as they quit producing.
And are you giving them good room to grow, air movement through the plants?
Oh,
is
yeah.
it in a well, kind
Absolutely.
Of a, not a windy area, but good air movement? Okay. There are some fungicides yeah. that you can use, that, but you have to be diligent with that. Apply it after a rain. But they do a pretty good job, the fungicides you can find at the garden centers.
All right. Well, David, good luck with that. I hope that works out for you. Here's a question from Twitter. Don says, my tomatoes are planted and looking great. When should I plant cucumbers in a raised bed garden?
I would probably do it maybe this weekend or next week.
Mm-hmm. All right. And back to the phones. Barbara's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I understand that the Asian stink bug may be a big problem this year. And I wondered what we do for that. And then also, I've had a problem with scale on my tomatoes. So what can we do about these? Thank you.
What was that last question?
Scale.
Oh.
Well, scale is not something that we typically mm-hmm. see on tomatoes. The stink bug is something that we might see. It's coming, but I don't think they're predicting a especially bad outbreak yet this year. So hopefully that's not going to be a problem.
All right. And if it is, we'll talk to Donald Lewis about it and cross that bridge when we come to it, right?
Right.
All right. Next up, we've got Reed on the line in Ames. Hi, Reed.
Good morning, everyone. Two quick questions. I was unable to stay for the whole discussion about rotating so you don't have tomatoes growing year after year. So question one is, in container gardening, what can I alternate in my containers in between tomato plantings? And kind of FYI, I love green leafy things, and I'm looking at planting okra and Brussels sprouts. Question number two is for the guests, please, and you too, Charity, tell what you know about root pruning in container gardening.
Well, I know nothing about it, so I'll turn that over to Richard and Linda.
As far as root pruning, I wouldn't do any, not at all.
Mm-mm.
So, and as far as rotating, something in a pot, typically I would dump the potting soil after each season. I typically would.
So in containers, you rotate the soil,
right.
not the,
right.
the planting.
Right. You can put the same plant back in the same container, but I would dump the potting mix. I would wash out the container and then use fresh potting mix the next year.
Mm-hmm. That way you can use tomato. You can do tomatoes in the same container.
Right.
All right, Reed, that sound like a plan?
Sounds good. Thanks very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's a question from Bill. Are grass clippings appropriate mulch for tomatoes and strawberries in my raised bed garden?
You can definitely use them. I like to let them dry first if you're going to use them, because if you put them down fresh and green, they might get a little bit smelly and build up some heat. So let them dry first.
All right. And this one's from Anne Marie. I had my vegetable garden soil tested, and I was advised that I should add nitrogen only. As an organic gardener, I'm mm-hmm. looking for an organic nitrogen source. While blood meal has been suggested, I learned that it contains antibiotics and hormones, which are fed to livestock. Just like manure from livestock, blood meal can put antibiotics and hormones into the soil. Is there a truly safe, non-toxic, organic source of nitrogen?
Blood meal basically is it, as far as organic. Mm-hmm. You can use like ammonium sulfate, but that's a chemical fertilizer. It is strictly nitrogen. It does contain sulfur too, but that is a chemical fertilizer. So it's basically something like ammonium sulfate or something like blood meal.
Okay. What about compost?
Compost will have some nitrogen in it, but it also contains other nutrients like phosphate and potash. And apparently those aren't needed. So again, you're adding something that's already there.
Okay, would that do damage to the plants that you're trying to grow there?
No, but Apparently, they're not necessary, and therefore, why add it?
Okay, but if she really wants to avoid blood meal, that might be a way that she could go.
That's a possibility.
Right. All right. We've got a couple of lines open for your calls right now, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can email talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. Francis is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. I noticed you haven't talked about one product that we use with our tomatoes. I use the Bloom Plus. I think that does a real fine job. And then there's people that have been talking about, you know, getting the tomatoes or dying on them or something like that. I had a neighbor back of me that was approximately 200 feet from a walnut tree, and that's what was getting him every year was a walnut tree. And then I'm like the other people. I like to use grass clippings, and I really enjoy tomatoes, so I think the Bloom Plus for me really does a good job. I'm just curious to know what you think about it.
Well, as far as the walnut tree does produce a compound, juglone, which can affect the growth of tomatoes that are close by. But 200 feet should not be an issue. I would say if the tomatoes are within like maybe 40, 50 feet of a walnut tree, that might be an issue. But 200 feet should not be a problem.
Regarding the Bloom Plus, it's been, well, this dates me, several years ago, I did a little field trial out at our demonstration gardens, and I used Bloom Plus or a similar product to that just to compare whether it would affect the set on tomatoes. Well, that's so variable. It depends on the temperature of that particular season, the amount of moisture. So what our trial didn't show that it affected it either way. However, I think climate has as big of impact on blossom set as any chemical you can put on them. For example, tomatoes, when temperatures, and it sounds like we're going to have a hot summer, when temperatures are above 90 or so, many of our tomatoes will drop their blossoms due to the high heat, particularly if that heat goes into the evening hours. The evening hours that still stay nice and warm above 75, our blossoms may drop. So certain varieties aren't as noticeable with that characteristic, but some still are. So high temperatures, high daytime temperatures are going to affect the number of fruit that set on our plants.
All right, Francis, thanks a lot for your call. And we've got a non-tomato question. Laura is on the line in Ames. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question about, I wanted to plant an apple tree. And I thought, oh, that should be easy, plant an apple tree. But I learned it needs to cross-pollinate. So I'm wondering if a crab apple tree works to cross-pollinate an apple tree.
Typically, they will.
Does that work?
So if you have a crab apple within like 50 to 100 feet, it can't be beyond 100 feet. But if you have a crab apple fairly close by, it should work.
So my next question is, I'm also learning about, it depends on when they blossom. Does a crab apple blossom for a long enough span of time that I can pretty much do any apple tree with it? Or do I have to do a certain variety of apple tree?
No, usually they do. They're usually enough.
At the same time.
Yeah, they usually bloom for maybe like 10 days or so. And usually there's some overlap there. So you will get pollination. So that shouldn't be a big problem.
Okay, so I can choose any apple tree for the most part.
Right. I would base it on, for example, your preferences as far as taste, texture, that type of thing.
Right. And then a crab apple tree in Ames, do they have much problem with like scab or mildew or?
Right. If I was going to buy a crab apple, I would make sure that tree, that variety is resistant to apple scab because that's a very common disease. It doesn't kill the tree, but it causes leaf drop. And if you have a variety that's very susceptible to it, by midsummer, you have a tree that's half naked, not terribly attractive. So it definitely should be apple scab resistant.
All right, Laura, thanks for your call. Ted is up next in Hopkinton. Hello, Ted.
Hi. Yeah, I got a question. I got a pond next to my house, and it's full of milfoil and all sorts of plants and organisms. And I was wondering if I drag that out of that pond, can I use that as fertilizer in the garden?
You could. And as far as control of that, next week I do believe we have our aquaculture specialist. So he could probably answer as far as controlling it in the pond.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Ted. And Joanne is on the line in Perry. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about a pear tree. We had have a tree that has been very prolific over the years, but started to develop a disease a year or two ago, and last year it produced the most bizarre distorted pears. I was wondering now if we should give up the entire tree, or can we saw off or cut off the diseased portion, because half of it did flower and half of it still looks alive.
So at this point, half the tree is alive, half is dead?
Is that correct?
The
disease. Yes.
Well, the biggest problem with pears would be fire blight. And that's very, very hard to control. If that tree is half dead, I think its days are numbered. And you can see what the tree might produce this year. But I don't think it's going to be around much longer, and I might remove it maybe in the fall.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Joanne, and we'll get a couple of email questions in here. Azra says, I realized I planted my carrots and beets and other vegetables too closely. They're ready to thin now, but are too close or bunched tightly together. Can I trim the tops of the seedlings to the ground with scissors rather than pull them out of the ground?
Yes, you can do that. It's very tedious, very time-consuming, but if you have just a small garden, it works by just trimming them, because the plants don't have any substance, any leaves, any vegetative matter to photosynthesize, so you're just going to kill the plant by decapitating them. Okay. That works, but if they're way close together, if you get them early enough, you can just pull them, the ones that are too close, and you're not going to really damage the one beside it. That's usually what most people do.
All right, and she's also asking, how many seeds should I plant per recommended width? I mean, thinning is a good idea to do, right?
Right. It's a very good idea. If in the row, it depends on the crop that you're growing. You could go as close as, you know, inch or two with radishes, thin them out to that, and beets. You could carrots maybe just a little wider, gives you good growth for that. But as far as if you do banding, I would at least give 2 inches between each plant in all directions if you're doing a wide row planting.
And they may want to try pelleted seed too, because mm-hmm. the pelleted seed is much, much easier to plant.
All right.
Good point.
Well, we are out of time. Linda Nave, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Richard Giron in Horticulture. And we'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.
What would life be without a homegrown tomatoes? Only 2 things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. That's for sure, but there's nothing that a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your own very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs and eat them with gravy. You can eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle. A homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes?